As I mentioned, tonight's study is on the Brahmaviharas. And the Brahmaviharas are known as the heavenly or divine abodes, four faces of love. They sound out of reach with those lofty titles, but they are real skills we can develop. States of mind, capacities that arise in our meditation practice. And also with mindfulness, wise intention, wise effort, these capacities will awaken and serve in our daily lives. I'll introduce loving kindness and compassion. I hope to explain how they're different, how they grow, and what inhibits their growth. We start with loving kindness because it's the foundation from which the others flow. A simple definition is friendliness. All the Brahmaviharas exist together and nourish each other, but they all meet the moment with an intention of friendliness. This is the foundation. So metta is a quality of befriending the moment with careful, caring mindfulness. It starts right here within ourselves and flows out from the depths of our own caring. This power of love can infuse our lives and become the antidote to fear and hatred, ill will towards ourselves and others. I like the way Valerie Mason John describes it in her book, 8-Step Recovery. She explains them as the four needs of the heart. And when people get sober or abstain from drugs and alcohol, they often face a world of shame and regret over things they've done in the past. She says we must meet the four needs of the heart to move through our lives. One, bringing kind attention to our thoughts, our body, our hearts. Attending to oneself with kind acceptance. Two, looking upon oneself with affection, caring, and offering forgiveness and warmth. Three, appreciating oneself, seeing our goodness. We have innate goodness. And four, acceptance, accepting ourselves just as we are in the moment. The truth is we are enough. Everything we do is enough, or we would have done something differently. Pema Chodron adds, meditation practice isn't about trying to throw ourselves away and become something better. It's about befriending who we already are. The ground of practice is you or me or whoever we are right now, just as we are. That's what we come to know with tremendous curiosity and interest. We need a willingness to put down our need for things to be perfect and to see why we are fearful, uncomfortable, and protective. So we incline the mind to friendliness and we learn to distrust those voices of fear, aversion, and hatred. And we move away from those old habits of mind that want to protect and defend, cause us to fight, flight, or freeze. They are protection, but they are oppression, as David White likes to say. They do not serve our spiritual growth. Friendliness is a skill because it's intentional. We commit to it and we practice it when we are not kind. It's a life practice to remember to be present and befriend what is here without our baggage of views, opinions, and preferences. We're very good at the bad habit of hating someone, says Joanna Hardy. It allows us to deflect uncomfortable feelings we're having and never have to come in contact with the hurt, grief, or sadness. So metta offers a way to hold our lives in the midst of being buffeted every day by stress, praise, blame, gain, loss, pleasure, pain, fame, and ill repute. And these happen to everyone. It's not personal. It's not permanent and not perfect. So metta is not being nice. it needs a deep sense of connection with another to be real metta. And that's something I learned in practice, because I thought I was nice. I didn't know the difference between kind and nice. One is kind of an empty habit, but the metta is really about being real with feelings. But an example, at AA meetings, there's a phrase often said to newcomers to relay, "It will get better and easier. Keep coming back," is what is said. It's usually said from a place of deep knowing and care. But those same words can also hurt. I had just enjoyed listening to a very interesting character who understands and practices the program. Afterwards, I heard a woman in the room say, "Keep coming back." And I was shocked, because the tone was laced with a subtle admonishment for being different, unconventional. So wholesome words can hold cruelty. But loving kindness is an antidote to cruelty, hatred, fear. It's medicine for dis-ease and judgment, and it all starts with ourselves. We notice it when they're absent. That's good, because it's important to see the truth of the moment, even if it's ugly, right? It's classroom. And it's good to see how we acted protective and we postured and we were defensive. We notice when our capacity is shut down and we awaken to aversion, disliking, preferences. The far enemy of metta is hatred. These habits of protection block metta. And mindfulness arises with metta. If mindfulness is not arisen, the defilements are there, aversion, greed, hatred. And that's why they call them enemies. So how easily a situation could be filled with care and skillful communication in one moment, and then in another, people are arguing. I had a conversation that turned sideways with my brother over the weekend. We were working on my car. He asked what year my car was, and I told him. He said he wanted to see the papers. I told him the year of the car. I said, "I know the year of the car. It's this." I told him again. Well, I wouldn't give him the papers. And before it was too late, it was triggered. I paused because I looked in his eyes and I saw how upset he was. There's something he was holding on to. I can't change that. But I know it upset him and escalated. So I stopped the play. I got out of the action and I saw how I was holding on to my ideas, my identity. I was clinging to being right. I lost my ground. I apologized. We connected. That's a little bit of an intro to compassion, because moving into compassion, that the commitment of compassion is to be present and to befriend pain. So with that invitation to meet pain with friendliness, compassion awakens. And the absolute breadth of it constantly amazes me and stuns me, because it is so difficult and uncomfortable. And compassion, or karuna, is a twofold process. The first is listening and allowing and being present to that tremble of the heart. Oh, the second is the action, the offering of metta. It is a fierce commitment to be near and offer kindness in the midst of pain. I put it together. It gets down and dirty in the hole with pain of others. And maybe that's what I did with my brother. Compassion has been expressed in the image of Kuan Yin, Avalokiteshvara, a bodhisattva who hears the cries of the world with 1,000 arms and hands, reaches out to touch the suffering of the world. Other images show her with swords and weapons in her hands. Before compassion can activate and radiate out to others, so kindness must be fully opened and drawn in ourselves. And is it not the purpose of the entire path and why we practice, to live in service to alleviating the pain and suffering of others? It does not mistake, however, that we may not be able to end the suffering. Holding the suffering is action. As Sharon Salzberg explains in her book, Loving Kindness, compassion's not at all weak. It's not a girly practice. In India, decades ago, she was traveling in a rickshaw and was attacked by a drunken man who tried to grab her and pull her off the rickshaw. And no one came to rescue her, but her friend sitting next to her pushed the man away. And when she got to the meditation center in Bodh Gaya, she was still shaken. She told her teacher, Munindra, who said, "Oh, Sharon, with all the loving kindness in your heart, you should have taken your umbrella and hit the man over the head with it." I like Roshi Joan Halifax. She uses the phrase to describe compassion as unbiased resilience. Compassion, she says, is a spacious environment from which to meet suffering with generosity and patience. It's not weak. It's not passive. It's to have sympathy for all beings without exception. And she also says sometimes we think we have to be passive, just accept the things that happen to us and not stand up for ourselves, that saying no is not kind. And we know that is not true. So what happens when we open to the pain of the world is that a spaciousness grows, a capacity of the heart opens, and acceptance and generosity grow. Our capacity for joy increases, all the while being present to states of sadness, not avoiding it. But we often can't bear it. Conversations are cut short. We don't want to hear it. We think we're not supposed to feel suffering. Even at a loved one's death, we're told not to cry. Put yourself together. Be quiet. And then when we're alone, we're not able to be with our own pain. We turn on the television. We eat. This constant stress. We forget, though, when we turn away from pain, we're also turning away from our capacity to have joy. Our greatest joy can be only equal to our greatest sorrow. And so some enemies of compassion inhibit the growth. Fear, guilt, that's not compassion. Compassion is open and clear. It's not about fixing or feeling sorry, but we do get lost and fear that despair will run our lives if we let our hearts out. Cruelty is the far enemy of compassion. I find that remarkable. Hatred seems opposite of loving kindness, right? But cruelty, opposite of compassion, it seems stronger, more cruel, if you will. But the Buddha said at one point, if we truly love ourselves, we would never harm another. Because if we harm another, it is some way diminishing who we are. It's taking away rather than adding to our lives. And I think this also relates to what Shantideva, Hindu monk and poet, says, that all sentient beings have a basic goodness. And if we focus on the problem of anger and not the person, we can understand it's their ignorance and not that's present and not who they are. They can't stop it. And we all share this fragility of life, stress, dukkha. Time check. Okay. And I thought of this, you know, we never got to attend the school of compassion that taught us how to live on the inside. Thank goodness we can now. So compassion is action, but we forget the stillness that comes first. To be still, to feel that tremble of the heart. But the action of compassion arises when we turn toward the difficult with care, in stillness, with uncertainty. It's not done out of a need to manage one's emotions, to fix. It's not a feeling, says Roshi. It's a fierce courage, a raging heart with a cool head that's able to see the moment exactly as it is and to bring one's capacities to serve that moment. She says, compassion is answering the question, what does the situation need? Not what do I need? The heart trembles and the call to act with wisdom is embodied. To rise above the stress in the moment, to ask what's going on here. It's challenging. And she works a lot with clinicians in difficult scenarios. So compassion is mindful. It's being able to access a felt sense of being grounded, feeling 2 feet on the ground, aware of one's breathing and in touch with challenging situations. But in reality, it may not look like that, especially with emergency calls. If you've ever had to call 911, you know that, what a serious emergency looks like. I remember being the only person on the scene when my mom fell down the stairs and was unconscious. I did not ground myself. I instinctively called 911. And when my mom was not moving or breathing, I could not talk to the 911 dispatcher clearly. My breath was so loud, fast, caught in my throat. I could not speak coherently, breathing heavily between the words. Then she repeated a question I had answered and I snapped out of it immediately. It was this reconnection, it seemed, about what I needed to do in the moment was be present with her. I also might have been irritated that she repeated the question, but the fact is there was a moment snapped out of it. But if we stay in somatic distress and imbalance, we can't discern what's needed. And it doesn't have to be an emergency. This might be a funny example, but I'm staying in a friend's condo. And one night I heard a dog howl for a very, very, very long time across the way. Long tonal howls that were melodic up and down. I paused and listened. And then out loud, I yelled, you know, it's okay, baby, you're all right. You know, I can't stop the suffering, but it helped me in the moment. Another example, I see a homeless woman pulling stuff out of the garbage dumpster and stuffing it into a rolling suitcase. I don't avoid her by crossing the other side of the street. I take in this situation and I do wish her well, but I don't assume she needs my help. I'm running out of time here, which I may get to this last part, but here's another interesting experience. There was a moment in a Hindu temple in Nepal as I was walking through it. My eyes met this woman near a statue. And in that moment, there was just a connection. Time stayed still. We were just taking in each other's humanity. And as if synchronized, we moved in at the same time and embraced each other and parted. No words, just a recognition of these two souls meeting. So Roshi Joan has a model for compassion. And I think I'm going to bring that up later. Yes, I'll bring that up later. Because she also reminds us that compassion is really contagious. And that's a real good thing. You know, when we hear of a compassionate act of someone else, that upwelling of goodness, we feel it too and wish well for them and wish that we could do something like that. And that's why I like to go to upworthy.com and Good News Network. They have all sorts of stories like that to remind us of the good, compassionate action out there. I wanted to end with the prayer from St. Francis of Assisi. I think it sums up what loving kindness and compassion offer. Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. Grant that I may not much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. It is in dying to self that we are born to eternal life. And that is my cue to end. Thank you for listening.